Walt Podcast. Make the most of your Walt Disney World vacation.
The top six Disney vacation planning trade-offs. Hi, I'm Herb Leibacher, and welcome to episode number 83 of the World of Walt Podcast. Make the most of your Walt Disney World vacation for the week of July 31st, 2016. This is the podcast for Walt Disney World fans, whether you're planning your next trip or just enjoy reliving a little bit of Disney magic. Today's podcast is sponsored by Ear to Their Travel. If you're planning a trip to any Disney destination, give Phil at Ear to Their Travel a call. Phil is a former Disney cast member, so he really knows how Disney works. He can help you plan all the details of your next trip at no cost to you, while making sure you get the best deal on your vacation. You can reach Phil at eartotheirtravel.com. When planning your Disney vacation, there are many decisions to make. Many of those decisions require trade-offs. You give some here, you get some there. And while many of these vacation trade-offs don't have a single right answer for everyone, we can look at the pros and cons of the options so you can make the best decision for your trip and for your family. So today, we're going to discuss the top six Disney vacation planning trade-offs. To help me explore this topic, I'd like to welcome a former Disney cast member and frequent Disney park visitor, Aaron Cohen. Aaron, welcome back.
Hello. Thank you for having me back.
Glad that you can be on the show, which I think is going to be an interesting one. And I kind of think of this as like an assignment for a high school debate team where we're each going to take a position on these different ones. Doesn't mean necessarily that's the right answer or the one that we always pick, but it will give us a way to kind of talk back and forth about the trade-offs that people get to choose.
Yeah, I think so. I'm actually looking forward to this one as well. I think it's going to be fun because there are so many options and so many choices when you're making, you know, when you're making your plans for a Disney vacation, and it can be a little overwhelming. Should I do this? Should I do that? And like you said, there's no right answer. And the ones we're going to present individually as we go into this don't necessarily mean this is what we always do, but they kind of lay out, you know, two of the major choices for each option and why one might be right for different people. So I think this is going to be a lot of fun. I think it's going to be, you know, hopefully very helpful for people who are planning. And hopefully it'll help people get a little less overwhelmed by all the decisions that need to be made.
Yeah, I agree. I think it'll be good for folks who are new to planning a Disney vacation. But for those who've been to Disney World often, I think it might be interesting, too, because they may consider a sort of the optional angle or the trade-off in a way that they hadn't thought about before. So good episode for everyone.
Yes.
All right. So before we dive into the topic for today, today's warm-up question is, what is your favorite scene in It's a Small World?
Wow. That's a weird one. I like it. you know, so Small World, I have this weird love-hate relationship with Small World. Mm-hmm. And then it's one of my favorite rides, but I spent many years trying to tell people it wasn't. Because it's so easy to kind of I don't want to reuse the word hate, it's a terrible word, but, you know, just kind of grumble about because it's got the super perky song and the happy singing children and all that. Yeah. I love that ride. So, anyways, you know, there's a part further on in the ride where you kind of get away from the singing children a little bit in the different countries, and you get into the kind of almost animals, like a zoo, and there's the happy cheetah with the umbrella, and there's the merry-go-round with the paper animals and things like that.
Yeah.
And there's the clear plastic streamers to look like water dripping down. And I love that section because it's so classic Disney and whimsical in so many ways. I mean, yes, all of it is. And all of it is, you know, you've got the very, you know, uplifting song and you've got the children, you've got all the happiness. So it's all very Disney. But it goes from these representations of different countries into just this kind of bizarre little whimsical, you know, menagerie of animals holding umbrellas and singing that I really, really think is fun. So I would say that's my favorite part of the ride.
That is an interesting part of the ride. And I do like the part with the sort of the green metallic streamers coming down. I always, in my mind, envision that represents sort of a rainforest sort of area. I don't know if it does or not, but that's always what goes through my mind when I'm going through that section.
I think so. I would believe rainforest.
Yeah. And I think you're like me and like a lot of other folks who have a love-hate relationship with It's a Small World. I think it's almost something where people are embarrassed to admit that they like it because, oh, well, like you're saying, it's very uplifting and it dolls and it's, you know, happy, happy. But it's a classic Disney ride with a lot of great history behind it. And it's really fun and it still holds up today. And I think it's a great attraction. I like it.
Yeah, actually, one of my earliest blog posts on Magic and Misadventures was, you know, quote unquote, admitting that I actually really, really liked It's a Small World after so long of kind of being like, no, I don't like that ride. And I finally, you know, came clean publicly and explained why I loved it and went on all those things about it. And ever since then, and that was probably 2 years ago now, ever since then, my daughter always calls it my favorite ride and just, you know, kind of. You know, tongue in cheek, but she always has fun kind of making fun of me and saying that Small World's a favorite ride now. So
yeah, we should have a podcast about in defense of It's a Small World. I think that might be an interesting angle.
That could be a fun one. I'd be down for that someday.
Yeah. So my favorite scene is maybe too obvious or too simple, but I really do like the closing scene where everything is in the white lights. You know, I've always been a sucker for lights, and there's so much of It's a Small World that's bright and colorful and provides a lot of variety, and it's interesting how it all kind of comes together in this blue and white edition in the end. But I think the thing that really draws me in about that is just the all the white lights that are running around in this scene. Like I said, I've always been kind of a sucker for that. I'm a sucker for it on Main Street USA and how all the buildings are outlined in whitish sort of lights. And I like that same effect in It's a Small World. And I think it's the lighting that does it for me. So that was the warm-up question. Now over to the topic for today, top six vacation planning trade-offs. And number one, Aaron, is over to you.
All right, so the first one we're going to talk about, and again, I want to stress that, you know, this is a debate. This isn't necessarily what each of us believe individually, and, you know, obviously there's so many choices depending on different situations. However, our first debate is going to be resort hotels and whether to go on-site or off-site. I'm going to take the position of on-site, and the reason I'm going to, you know, defend on-site hotels, there's a couple reasons. The first one is you're on Disney property. You're right there. And this means you have access to all of the Disney transportation. You have access to the buses or monorails or even ferries and boats, depending on which resort you're staying at, which means you don't need your own transportation. You don't need your own car. So if you drove there, you can just park your car and leave it. If you flew and didn't use a car at all, then you don't need it. And everything's right there. You get out of your hotel room and you go downstairs and you grab breakfast if you want or whatever, and you get on a bus and you go to the parks and, you know, your 10-minute ride. So there's a convenience factor which just cannot be denied, cannot be, you know, undervalued in any way, shape, or form. The themes of the hotels are a lot of fun. They all have unique themes. They have a lot of, you know, very Disney. They're actually part of the experience to me. A lot of hotels, they're a hotel. You go in, you've got your room, you've got the grounds, you maybe probably have a pool. And they're fine, they're serviceable, but they're not interesting. Whereas if you go to something like the Caribbean Beach Resort, for example, on Disney property, the rooms are themed, and you walk along the grounds, it's themed like the Caribbean Spanish fort at the pool, and there's cannons spraying water into the pool and all these things. And it's really cool, and it's really unique, and it's really different, and it really is just part of staying at Disney to me, in a way. And yeah, you're probably going to spend a little bit more money on property sometimes, not always. If you hunt, you can find deals. But I really just think that between the convenience and it being a part of the experience, on-site's the way to go.
I get your positioning on this, and I think you make good points, especially about the theming of the attractions and the convenience from a transportation perspective. So I'm going to take the position of staying off-site, and I think staying off-site can make sense in a number of different situations. So first, if you have a really big traveling party, if you have maybe six or more people, maybe an extended family going on vacation, it can become more expensive to stay on-site because you're going to have to rent multiple rooms. And you can you can find many different vacation homes and vacation condos around the Central Florida area where you can have an entire house to yourself with your own pool and a full-size kitchen and washer and dryer and bedrooms for everyone, which can often be much more cost-effective and give you a space where everyone can be together under the same roof and not separated into different rooms. Another situation where offsite may be a good deal is when you're really watching every penny, especially if you have your own transportation. So if you have driven to Walt Disney World and you really need to make the most of every dollar, especially in busy seasons, you can often get a good rate at a nearby hotel. Now, you have to balance that against what you're going to be paying for gas and what you're going to have to pay to park your car, which is, as of the summer of 2016, it's $20 a day. So you've got to balance those things out. But for folks who have to watch every penny, if you plan carefully, oftentimes you can get a cheaper spot off-site, especially if you have your car with you.
Yeah, definitely. Those are very good points. I'm going to throw one more into my on-site defense, though. And that's the fact that because you're on property, you have access to Disney concierge cast members that can help you book reservations or even, you know, help you add days on your tickets. And if you're in the parks and you purchase something, you can have it sent right to your room or right to your resort, which is pretty cool.
Yep.
So I'll toss that in. But, you know, there's definitely advantages to off-site as well. You're right. And one thing that you didn't mention, which I'll throw in, I'll jump to the other side momentarily, is that if you are planning on seeing other attractions around Orlando, we won't mention them because this is a Disney podcast, but...
there are some?
There are some, I've heard.
Yeah, rumors.
Yeah. But you know, even if you want to go into Orlando and see stuff or, you know, meet friends for dinner or whatever in the area, you know, it can be a little bit maybe more convenient, you know, if you want to maybe find something in between different, you know, attractions, you're not necessarily driving further from one to the other. So, yeah, I mean, it's definitely, I can see value either way.
Yeah. Yeah, me too. I do like staying on site. I have stayed off site when I wasn't a local, and I did do that in a vacation home and really enjoyed it. I mean, just the privacy and the space. So it's a good trade-off for our first one, on-site versus off-site. Okay, number two is over to me. And so we're going to talk about to hop or not to hop. So I'm going to take the position of adding the park hopper to your ticket. Of course, when you add the park hopper option to your ticket, it is an additional expense. But I often think it's worth it, especially if you're someone who's been to the Walt Disney World Resort several times. The reason why is that if you want to pick and choose the attractions, you can, say, go over to the Magic Kingdom in the morning and take a tour of Space Mountain. And then in the afternoon, you can head over to Epcot and go on Mission Space. So it gives you a lot of extra flexibility, especially if you're trying to pick up new attractions that have opened or changed since your last visit. If you like to mix up the nighttime spectaculars, so maybe you're a big Epcot fan and you want to spend a big part of the day in World Showcase, but you've seen Illuminations plenty of times and haven't seen Wishes in a while, it allows you to hop on the monorail, get over to the Magic Kingdom, and take in Wishes. So I think Park Hopper is a great way to add a lot of flexibility to your trip, especially for folks who have been to the parks a number of times.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I've park hopped many, many times. Actually, one of my more recent trips, I hopped to all four parks in one day.
Wow, that's a lot of hopping.
That was a lot of hopping. That was a little crazy. It was, managed to do it. I managed to actually see attractions at every stop, but started in Animal Kingdom, went to Hollywood Studios next, then Epcot, then Magic Kingdom, yeah. But unless you're crazy like me, I think there's something to be said for not park hopping at all. And my reason for that is there's so much to see in the parks that even someone like me who's seen all of the attractions plenty of times can still go to a park and spend all day there. I mean, Magic Kingdom, to me, is still a full day no matter what, and Epcot can be a full day no matter what. And it is an additional cost. So if you have the means to just do enough days to see multiple parks. And, you know, obviously you have to balance the cost of park hopping versus, if you want to see something in every park, the cost of having a trip where you can see all four parks individually over across 4 days,
yeah,
which could be more expensive because you have an additional hotel, you have the additional days of the ticket. So there are some cost things to consider. However, I like getting up in the morning and going to the chosen park for the day and spending the day at that park and kind of getting immersed in that park. And then grabbing lunch and, you know, and even if you just kind of take it easy and you kind of stop on a bench and relax for a little while and then move on. One thing about park hopping that you have to take into account, I don't think a lot of people do, is it does take time to travel between the parks.
Right.
If you're between Epcot and Magic Kingdom, there's the monorail. If you're between the other ones, there's the ferries or there's the buses. But, you know, you're losing anywhere from, on a low end, 20 minutes to half an hour, probably upwards to an hour, depending on how busy things are, to move between the parks. So if you really don't want to lose any time and you really want to see as much as humanly possible, that's something to take into account. And that may not be worth it for you. I have done, you know, I've done trips where I've done just each park in a different day. But, you know, started at one and then the next day done something else. Also, I've done shorter trips where I've kind of picked a couple of parks where I've done like, okay, Magic Kingdom is always a constant. We always do Magic Kingdom. But for my honeymoon a few years back, we did Hollywood Studios and Magic Kingdom and skipped Epcot and Animal Kingdom. Now, of course, we've seen them before. So we have that. If you haven't seen them, then you wouldn't necessarily want to skip anything.
Mm-hmm.
Then the next trip, we did Magic Kingdom, Epcot, and Hollywood Studios. Didn't do Animal Kingdom. So, you know, if you have been there, you kind of have that advantage. But I don't know. I think just getting in there and seeing everything and making sure you've seen everything and spending the whole day in one park and immersing yourself in that park can be the way to go.
Yeah. It seems like another one where, as in many things in life, finances really play a role. So if you're able to add on the park hopper and it's not going to break the budget, it gives you some extra flexibility. But you also make a great point about the amount of time. So I think some folks think that, you know, Magic Kingdom sits right next door to Disney's Hollywood Studio, and it doesn't. So you're going to have to plan to lose some time as you move from one to the other. So it's an interesting trade-off, the great park hopper versus not park hopper debate.
Yeah, it's one that, you know, there's so many different angles and everyone has a different opinion, and it a lot, like all of this, depends on the type of trip you're trying to plan.
Yeah.
But there's definite cases for both sides, and they're both right in their own way. It's not like there's one right or wrong answer.
Yep, I agree. All right, that was good. Number two, park hopper versus not. Number three, Aaron, back to you.
So the next one is, so this is based on if you were staying on property. There are different classes of resort. There's value versus moderate versus deluxe. And the different levels have different cost bases and they have different amenities. So it can be confusing. Barring money being an object, it can be confusing. So, you know, I'm going to jump into the resort class debate and make the case for values. Now, the value is generally the least expensive option available on property. Sometimes not by much. It can often be worth checking moderates as well because sometimes they're close. But in general, values are the least expensive. You lose some amenities. You don't have fridges in the room standard. You'd have to, they're additional charge if you want to have them in your room. The rooms are often a little smaller. But you're not necessarily there to spend time in the room. You're there to get up in the morning, go to the parks, and be in the parks all day. And then come back at night, you know, take a shower and go to sleep. And a value resort lets you do that. And the money that you're saving on the room, frankly, is money you can either save or spend elsewhere in the parks. You know, that money can go towards tickets, go towards souvenirs, go towards food. So unless you're really planning on spending time in the resort, or unless you're one that really loves to live, you know, to stay in the lap of luxury, I feel a value is more than adequate for your needs, taking into account that you're probably not going to spend a lot of time in the room. And all the hotels have food courts. All of them have gift shops with not only souvenirs, but basic amenities, you know, like painkillers and toothbrushes and things that you may need throughout the trip. They all have pools. They all have transportation to the parks. So there's a baseline that is fine. So I feel that the money that you're saving can be used elsewhere.
Yep, I understand your point of view. And I've been assigned the deluxe category. So I'm going to quote the famous Ferris Bueller and say, if you have the means, I highly recommend, well, he said picking one up, but I highly recommend Disney Deluxe Resorts. So this really does come down to cost. And it, like you say, if you're going to spend a lot of time in the resort and you are able to pay the extra expense, the deluxe resorts tend to have, I'd say, maybe somewhat more rich theming and a greater number of amenities. So I've had the opportunity to stay at Values, and I've had the opportunity to stay at Deluxe. And so the Deluxe really paid off on one trip where I was going with my family, and many years ago, my mom wasn't feeling well, so we weren't able to go to the parks, but we were able to hang around close to the room and check out the orchestra in the lobby or walk around the grounds and enjoy the landscaping. So it was a chance to take advantage of that which the Deluxe Resort offered. Deluxe resorts often have additional amenities as far as restaurants, so more options, more upscale options. Sometimes the gift shops, they have multiple shops. They're themed in different ways, or they offer different products. So for those who are able to splurge a bit, I think a deluxe resort room is a nice way to go.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, that was number three. Number four, Aaron, back to you.
Nope, number four is back to you.
Oh, number four is back to me. You're right.
But I'll take it. No, it's your podcast. So you get
it. No, it's mine. I'm taking it. Okay, so we're going to talk about one of the most hotly debated choices in all of the universe of Disney, and that is dining plan or pay as you go. And so I've got the position of doing the dining plan. So the dining plan in days gone by, I think, was a much better financial value. You could sort of calculate it all out and say, wow, I'm going to save hard cold cash if I choose the dining plan. And that may not be the case these days. I think it's much harder to prove that the dining plan is actually saving money. But one thing I think the dining plan does do is it allows you first to prepay for your meal so you don't have to worry about it. And then secondly, it allows you to pretty much not have to bother with counting your dollars when it comes to food. So it's prepaid. It makes it easy in many senses because you know the number of credits you're going to get. You don't have to pay for those different meals. If you want a steak every night, go ahead and do it. So I think the one big thing the dining plan still does do is it offers a sense of simplicity in prepaying and in giving you freedom to not have to worry about the bill each time. And I think there's a lot of value to that, even if there isn't as much hard financial value in the dining plan.
Yeah, you know, and I will admit I've actually never done the dining plan. So my position of not using it comes from a place of where I've never used it. And that's because before a trip of several years ago when we were actually considering it, because like you said, it's very popular, and you know, I know friends who swear by it and get it every single time. So my wife and I sat down and calculated, and we looked at how we tend to eat in the parks, and estimated how much it would cost for us to eat in the parks, and the type of just how we do it, you know, and came up with a rough number, and then put that against how much the dining plan would cost. And for the two of us, now we are two adults. We don't travel with kids, and we tend to stick to quick service most of the time. We're just of the mind. We definitely like sitting down and having some fine meals now and again, but we generally, especially for breakfast and lunch, feel that you know, the less time eating is more time in the parks. So we found it wasn't cost effective for us, and we looked at what we would have been paying on the dining plan versus what we would just pay out of pocket, and found that we'd actually be probably a little cheaper and to do out of pocket. And also, the thing with the dining plan is you're somewhat locked into the type of level you've chosen. So there's different types of dining plans. There's quick service, where you get, you know, two quick service credits each day. There's the mix where it's quick service and a table service, or there's the higher end ones where it's all table service. So you do have some customization, but then in a way you're kind of locked into that, in my opinion, where let's say you do the quick service ones, and then you go into, you know, and you're in the parks and you do your quick service credit for lunch, and then, you know, you're tired, you really just want to sit down and go to a table service. And then you're kind of out, you know, you just kind of thrown off your whole system. And I've heard some reports where Disney will kind of work with you a little bit on the credits and kind of, you know, help, you know, kind of maybe help. And I've also heard some situations where, no, this is what, like, they're fairly strict about it. So I don't know. I think your mileage may vary on it. But, you know, I feel like you're almost locked into the... you know, what you purchased, what you pre-purchased. And, you know, and for our numbers, we would have had to go to a table service and sit down and eat like the most expensive thing on the menu every day to make it cost effective for us.
Yeah.
So, you know, and again, if you have a bunch of people and you really want that convenience, there's something to be said for that. I do find that as you can just pay with Magic Bands now, the convenience is starting to balance a little bit, because you can just flash your wrist and be done. Instead of, you know, pulling out money. Of course, you still have to pay for that at the end of the trip. But
right.
The one thing I will say that I think a lot of people don't understand, so I'm throwing this kind of as an aside that kind of isn't on either position, is one thing you're going to see a lot is Disney offering the free dining plan. I know people that wait for this to come around because they're super excited that Disney offering the free dining plan. And it is and it isn't, and I feel this is an important distinction to throw in here when making your decision, is yes, they're not charging you for the dining plan, but you have to buy a package with the hotel, which can sometimes be more expensive. When I was booking my honeymoon, I did a package first that was the room and the Disney tickets and these different things, which came to whatever it came to, and it was, you know, a decent price. And then I ended up doing some research, and I managed to find a deal, you know, 2 months later before we actually went on the trip, and found that I could buy the Disney tickets and the room separately from the package, and actually it would be cheaper in the package.
Yeah.
So I feel that it does mean sitting down and, you know, doing some pretty hardcore mathing to run some numbers, but I feel that rather than just sitting down and being, okay, what's the dining plan? It can be worth seeing if it's financially viable. Now, like you said, there's a definite convenience factor to it. So if you just want to be able to go in and show your Magic Band and get the credits and be done, then that's great. And obviously there's situations where if you do have kids, you have picky eaters, different things, and maybe it could be financially worth it. But, you know, for my situation, I've found consistently it is not worth doing.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm going to jump over to your side for a second and talk about the free dining plan, because I think folks go gaga over the free dining plan. Free is a very magical word, but as you say, if you get the free dining plan, you are paying the rack rate for the room. You're paying the highest rate for the room. And so this is one where it really is important to sit down and crunch the numbers on how you eat and how long you're going to stay and what the different options are. And if you're not a number cruncher, you may want to check in with a travel agent who can help crunch those numbers for you. So just because something's free doesn't mean it's cheaper, actually. Sometimes it can end up being more expensive. So that's one for your column, Aaron, in the pay-as-you-go. Back to my column on the dining plan, one other item I wanted to mention is that the dining plan is a great excuse to eat and eat a bunch.
Yeah.
So if you're the type who maybe feels a little bit guilty about having desserts at most meals, hey, your dessert's included. So, you know, don't want to waste it. Go ahead and get it. So in addition to the convenience of not having to pay each time and not having to worry about the price of the items on the menu, it's a great excuse just to go and eat as much as you want. It's pretty hard to use up all the credits. I know lots of folks end up buying a bunch of, I don't know, snacks at the end to try to burn up their final credits. So I think just the excuse that you can eat as much as you want is kind of an alluring part of the dining plan, and another reason why some folks choose it. And we all know, yeah, the calories don't count anyway. So
not when you're on vacation.
Go for it. Yeah.
You know, and the thing is too, and you know, we kind of jump to your side, because apparently we're both terrible at debating. so, you know. there is something where if you are prone to get the most expensive thing on the menu, or you want to because Disney food is great and you really want to, you know, have the freedom to get something that could be more pricey without, you know, worrying about how much it costs, then yeah, that could be. And again, it comes down to doing the research on how you are personally, you know, you and your travel companions are likely to eat and how much you think you would spend on that out of pocket versus getting the dining plan.
Yeah.
I've got some friends who they do like to you know, go to Disney, enjoy fine dining, and they like to go to the more expensive restaurants and enjoy, you know, some of the nicer options on the menu without having to worry about, you know, oh, hey, should we buy this? You know, whereas because I don't do the dining plan, we do tend to look at the cost of the, you know, we'll sometimes do maybe one really nice meal per trip where we sit down someplace classier than, you know, Cosmic Rays. Not that I don't think the toppings bar isn't amazing, but classy isn't a word that springs to mind.
Yeah.
You know, so it definitely has its place, and I just, you know, I just can't stress enough just the you know, it does mean sitting down and brushing off some of those elementary school math skills, but I think if it can save you some money, it's worth doing.
Yeah. Yeah, I think we're collaborative debaters. So
I think
we're debating with each other or together or whatever. I don't know how you say it.
We'll go with it.
Yeah. All right. So now number five is back over to you.
Oh, it is back over to me. And so the next thing we're going to, quote unquote, debate is going to the parks every day or having some downtime and maybe taking a day or so off from the parks. The position I am going to stand on, because I firmly believe in this one, is take some downtime. Take a down day. Now, a down day can mean a couple of different things, so I'm gonna clarify this a little bit. It can mean either just don't leave the hotel and just lounge by the pool all day, or it can mean, you know, maybe do something, but don't necessarily go to the park. You know, maybe go to Downtown Disney for a couple hours, have lunch, some shopping, maybe do some mini golfing at one of the mini golf courses. You know, maybe even, I don't know, I'll throw water parks in there, but that's on the fence there. But generally you only do that for a couple hours. But I think the pace of the parks is so hectic and they're so exhausting. And you're walking for quite literally miles a day. According to my wife's Fitbit, we were averaging about 10 miles a day on our last trip. So we definitely, you know, it definitely is exhausting. And I think taking some time to just kind of enjoy the Florida sunshine, enjoy the pool at the hotel, especially if you are staying, you know, on property and you've got these nice themed hotels, these nice themed pools, it can be nice. And, you know, we did that on our honeymoon where, you know, we'd done the parks, but we did just take a day and we just, you know, we got up. We didn't have to get up early because we had to, you know, rush to the parks, and we, you know, lounged by the pool for a couple hours. We had a nice lunch at the food court, and we walked the grounds. We stayed at the Caribbean Beach, which is a moderate resort. We walked around and got to see the grounds, and it was just kind of nice, and it was kind of relaxing. And the point of vacation is to relax in the end. So, you know, I will say that when we did it for the honeymoon, we did it towards the front of the trip. So we kind of got there, we had a day, and then we had our down day almost right away, and then did the parks for a few days. I would say that next time I plan it, I'm definitely doing it in the middle of the trip or even towards the end, where do a couple park days, have a day off, lounge by the pool, and then go back to the parks. You know, I think it's good to recharge, and I think especially towards the end of a really hectic trip. We did a trip once where we did four parks in 4 days. We got up each morning and we did Hollywood Studios first, and then we did, I forget if it was Epcot or Animal Kingdom, it was one of them. We did one of them, then we did the other one the next day, then we did Magic Kingdom the last day. And it was great, but oh man, we were tired by the end of that. And by the end of Magic Kingdom, we were dragging.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas we'd broken it up and had, you know, a day off in the middle, I think we would have been energized and bright-eyed, bushy-tailed. So I definitely believe that if you have the means to have that extra day fit into your plans, I think a down day is a great, great thing to do.
All right, so I'm going to take the opposite position as go to the parks every day. So I'm going to try not to elaborate too much on your point, because you just did a great job of doing that. So go to the parks every day. When you are going to Walt Disney World, you are there for the parks. So when you're at home, you can take in your local Under Armour store. You don't have to go to Disney Springs for that. You could take a vacation after your vacation, because while they may have a Wetzel's Pretzels near your local mall, they certainly don't have a Cinderella Castle near your local mall. The reason why you are there is to visit the parks, and I think you should spend your time checking out what's available in the parks. And that doesn't mean that you can't slow down and smell the roses in the parks. So you can take a break and take a load off, check out a local bench, and just watch what goes by on Main Street USA. But when you're on your vacation, I'm taking the position, go to the parks. You can rest when you get home, and you can do a lot of the other stuff that's outside of the parks when you're at home as well.
Yeah, and like I said, I've definitely done that. But, you know, this is one that I'm not going to jump sides on, because I feel pretty strongly about having a day off. Now, I will say that one thing that we do a lot, and there's ways to kind of, I think, compromise on this. And so when we fly in, so I live in Boston, so when we fly in, we make it a point, whenever possible, to fly out of Boston as early as possible. I've gotten up really, really, really early to get to the airport. Because then it's only a few hour flight, and we land in Orlando late morning, early afternoon. We get to the parks, and then you kind of have the rest of the day. I mean, you're not necessarily going to go into the parks, because you're kind of wasting a day if you're only going in there for, by that point, a handful of hours, you know, a few hours. So yes, it's kind of front loading your relaxing day, which I did say isn't ideal, but you know, take that first day, lounge. You know, if you can get there early enough, lounge by the pool that day, and just kind of, you know, you're on vacation. Get away from work and from home for as long as you can while you're down there, and just put your feet up. And you know, jumping back to your side of a point, this is where a higher end resort would be nicer, like a moderate or deluxe, because you can have more amenities to enjoy while you're hanging around the hotel, more food options, like you said, generally a nicer pool. And so if you are going to take a down day, that could, you know, make a moderate or deluxe a little bit nicer choice. But no, I think, I don't know, that's, I'm going to stop talking now, because I have nothing after this. This is a point I feel fairly strongly about, so I can keep going about it, so I'm going to stop.
So I like how you connected the down days to the resort class. That was a good bridge there. I've got three things I could say to start debating for your side of the down days, but I'm not going to do that. I'm going to try to hold up strong on my debating skills, and we'll jump over to the last item, which is number six, which is going to be rental car versus Magical Express. So I'm going to take the position of rental car or personal car. So for those folks who are able to drive, and maybe that's the way your family prefers to travel, maybe that's cheaper for you, maybe you enjoy the convenience of having your own car, or you enjoy the convenience of having a rental car, I think there are some perks. So you can carry as much stuff as you want. You don't have to drag it all through the airport, and you can bring that extra pillow that you may really like and put it in the back of your car. Rental car gives you, or your own car gives you, the ability to wander off site if you want to do that. If you want to go pick up some less expensive food at the grocery store, or some supplies that are something important for you, if you plan to visit some of those phantom supposed other attractions that may or may not exist around Central Florida, a car allows you to do those too. So I think there are a lot of perks of having your own car with you, or renting a car once you're in Florida.
You know, I've definitely done the drive from Boston to Orlando. I don't recommend it, incidentally, as a side note.
It's a long drive.
I don't recommend doing it straight from one to the other, like I've done multiple times. Mm-hmm. But anyways, that's not the point here. So if you're going to fly into – if you're going to choose to fly and you land and you're staying on property, and this part is very important because my whole point does not apply if you're staying off property. You do not need a car. And the reason for that is Disney's Magical Express. Now, what that is a free shuttle service that picks you up from the airport, takes you right to your resort, drops you off, and then at the end of your trip, takes you back. And there's some really cool additional features in this. So when you book Disney Magical Express, so you book your Disney resort, and you know they'll ask you if you're using Magical Express, and you say yes, and you're using, you know, so you book that as well. And what they'll do, and they'll ask for your flight number and all that information. If you don't have it on hand, if you book in the hotel first, you can call them back and enter that information in later on. And they'll send you these yellow tags. At least a yellow, last time I did it, the color could have changed, don't hold me to that. Luggage tags, these stickers you put on your luggage. So when you land at Orlando International Airport, if you're using the Magical Express reservation, you don't even go to the baggage claim. You just go right to the Magical Express desk and show them your confirmation, or they'll look it up, and you get on the bus. They pick up your bags. They take them to your room right for you. At the end of your trip, instead of having to lug your bags onto the bus back to the airport, you bring the bags to the Magical Express desk in the lobby of the Disney Resort. They check them for you. They take them, and they check them to the airport, so all you have to do is go right to security, and there's a level of convenience that cannot be beat. And once you're there, because you have the buses and the monorail and the ferries and all these options, you don't need to leave. You know, if your plan is to not leave Disney property, there's no reason for your own transportation. And it's, I think it's great. The only reason I would say, you know, like you said, if you need to get off property to get something at like a local grocery store, you know, obviously you lose that, but that's what taxis and Uber are for. I feel that from a cost standpoint, you're still saving. You know, and as a side note, as a personal bit of advice, if you do Magical Express, I would say pack your bathing suit in your carry-on. And the reason I say that is because of what I just mentioned about how they'll pick up your bags for you from baggage claims, so you don't have to do it. It can sometimes take a few hours from them dropping you off at your resort to the bags appearing in your room, just because they have so many, you know, people to drop off and so many bags to process and all this. So what I've found in my experience is if you go to your room, drop your bag, you know, drop your carry-on, get changed, go down to the food court, grab some food, lounge by the pool for a few hours. By the time you get back, your bag's waiting for you. But it means you're kind of prepared for that. But yeah, I think overall, Magical Express is a great service, and it eliminates the need to ever either rent a car or, once you park yours at the resort, ever use it again.
Mm-hmm. So you did another interesting bridge here from Magical Express to staying on site, and I think that's a good point. So if you're staying off site, even at some of the Good Neighbor hotels, I believe, Magical Express isn't an option for you. So you're going to need some way to get around. Either to get from the airport to your vacation home or your off-site hotel, or to those other supposed attractions. So there's an interesting connection here between Magical Express and staying on-site, because it's a requirement. And if you're staying off-site, then you need a way to get around, and a rental car, your own car, probably the way to go.
Yeah, definitely. And I've stayed at a Good Neighbor hotel once. And for those who don't know what that means, there's a line of hotels right outside of Disney Springs, which is kind of like one kind of long stretch of generally higher end hotels that are walking distance from Disney Springs, and they're considered the Good Neighbor hotels. They're not Disney owned, they're not on Disney property, but they're the closest ones. And I've stayed at one, and they do not have the Magical Express access. And they have their own shuttles. They don't have the actual Disney transportation options. So they're good neighbors, but there's still a fence between them. Also, for the record, again, personal experience, a cab from Orlando International Airport to the Disney property area is over $50.
Mm.
At least it was last year.
Yeah.
Don't make the same mistake I did. Don't do that.
That's a pretty big ticket item.
There's a story there we're not going to go into, but trust me, this is how I know this.
Lessons learned, right? Lessons learned. All right. Well, before I start debating for your point again, and with my expert debating skills to go for the other guy's side, I'm going to summarize our list, which I think was very interesting, all these pros and cons and how they connect to one another. So number one, on-site versus off-site. Number two, to hop or not to hop. Number three, resort class value versus deluxe. Number four, dining plan or pay-as-you-go. Number five, down days or commando park every day. And number six, rental car versus magical express. So good list and a lot of considerations there for folks to think about in their own situation.
I think so. You know, like we said at the start, I mean, it's planning a Disney trip can be so overwhelming, especially if you're new to it. And hopefully this, you know, helped eliminate that stress a little bit. You know, I'm sure there's other decisions to make, and I'm sure there's still some stress involved, but I think we laid out some of the really big ones to look at.
I agree. All right, Aaron, so if people are interested in what you're up to in the world of Disney, how can they find out more about you?
Well, they can head on over to my blog, which is called Magic and Misadventures. That is magicandmisadventures.com. And my blog kind of runs the gamut of Disney-related topics. Sometimes it's a rant about something that's closed or something I really feel strongly about that I feel, you know, they're doing wrong. Sometimes it's nostalgia and looking at just things that I miss from the olden days. Sometimes it's discussion of current news. Sometimes it's do-it-yourself projects like decorating magic bands. It really is just kind of all over the map. And I do have various social media outlets. You can find me on Instagram, Twitter, YouTube, and the links are all on magicandmisadventures.com. So that is where I am, and that is what I do.
You know, I've never been much of an Instagram kind of guy, but I do enjoy checking out the photos you post on Instagram. You've got an interesting style in how you've put your images together there.
Thank you. I do actually try to at least do something unique. I feel there's, you know, I mean, a lot of people put pictures of the castles, and the castles are great, but there's a lot of details in Disney, and I try to, you know, highlight some of those. And I'm learning how to edit, so hopefully they're getting better. I don't know. We'll see.
What a wedding. It's a whole other world to get into, isn't it?
It really is.
All right, Aaron, as always, thanks so much for joining me.
Oh, thank you. This one was a lot of fun.
Today we head out to the music of Disney's Magical Express, and yes, we've made it through the list of the top six Disney vacation planning trade-offs, but our conversation isn't over. I'd love to hear what you think about our list. Do you have something you'd like to add? You can do that by visiting the show notes page at worldofwalt.com/83, a page that I must say works well on desktops, smartphones, and tablets. Leave your comments in the comments section and check out what other people think as well. If you liked today's podcast, I would appreciate it if you would spread the word. Tell your friends and your family about it. To wrap up for today, I would like to, as always, give you a heartfelt thank you for spending a little bit of your time with me today. I'd also like to thank everyone who visits the worldofwalt.com site, where you can read interesting Disney articles and chat with other folks who enjoy Disney in the forums and the comment sections. By listening here and by visiting the site, you allow me to share the fun of Disney with you. And that is very cool. Thank you for being a part of it. So until next time, my friend, may God bless you.
Just a dream away. So there's a great, big, beautiful tomorrow. Shining at the end of every day. There's a great, big, beautiful tomorrow. Just a dream away.